79% of the companies are beating, with an average of about 6% beating. Now, the five-year average is 77% beat. So, okay, because yields have absolutely just gone parabolic since the very beginning of October, and there's an interesting correlation to place. I think that could get us to 6,000 on the S&P by the end of the year, without too much trouble, maybe 6,100.
Tend to expect that number to gravitate towards 50% long term.
Sorry about that.
No, I'm saving that for a horn sound every time you say something silly on the show. I'm going to play that in the background. Yeah, let's get at it. So welcome back to the Intelligent Investment Show with Garrett Lill and the perfect hair day, Matt Dahl, as always.
Have welcome a solid back, hair day. Thank you very much.
Solid hair day. I've got to get mine cut, man. I can't have a good hair day anymore because it's just so – it's getting – mine doesn't work when it gets longer than – what it was about a month ago.
That works for you because you're like the artistic side of the show.
There you go.
You have like that long, hippie hair. It's fine. It works.
I love it, man. Well, we're running this. I'm excited about this show, man, because I've been out of touch for the last few days, so we didn't get to have our customary pre-production show, and then we're kind of running a two-minute drill today. We're just kind of shooting from the hip, and I love it. I think we do some good. I think that's
yeah. You know what? Everyone who's listening should be proud of our Garrett Lail here. He skipped his our pre-production show yesterday so that he could go up in the mountains and help the people from Hurricane Helene. I walked outside after a bad windstorm here once and a chair had tipped over in my backyard. And I thought, you know, we will rebuild. We will rebuild. And we'll put it back together, you know. Put it back up. So luckily we don't have to face any of those challenges out here very often, if ever, like you guys do out there. So, man, you should be proud of yourself. That's a pretty cool thing you did.
Well, I enjoyed doing it. And I've had it's one of these things where I don't want to pat on the back for it at all, and I appreciate it. But no, there are some really – I saw some heartbreaking things, and I'd say one yesterday was the last job that we did up there was probably the most interesting to me. There was a kid there, his special needs, and they had lost about everything they had, and were piling up the remnants from their house, and you could fit everything that was going to – everything that they got to keep, you could fit in the back of my 4Runner. And all the rest of it's in a big heap that'll go out on a dump truck, you know, at some point. But I tell you, this kid, he was so elated and so excited over everything that you found that was salvageable, as opposed to being, you know, you can look at, you know, and this is almost philosophical about life, right? You can look at the big pile of things that have been destroyed and that you've lost, or you can look at the little pile of things that were saved. And he was so elated and excited by all the things that he was getting to keep, as opposed to being upset about the things he was losing. So it was a really interesting perspective to see, for sure, and very humbling, I think, to see that perspective. So it was a blessing to get to be up there. I enjoyed it a great deal. But I did lose touch with the market. I did not have any clue what we were going to talk about today or have any kind of pre-show prep. But one thing we were talking about there, and I was actually – this plays really well into something that I was going to maybe bring up. This is one show – we could try not to go political all we want to, but this is the last Intelligent Investment Show we're going to have before we have a new president-elect. We'll know the answer to one of the biggest questions that's faced the markets this year by the time we chat again. And I saw an article the other day, and I've heard a couple of things that apparently someone was saying that what Harris seems to be doing on the campaign trail now kind of mimics what Dole did in like 96, where rather than going to votes, you know, going to the swing states to get more votes to help her win, it's going to the states that seem to be a little bit more Senate focused and House focused and trying to shore up as many votes there. And I have no idea if that's true or not, but I'm looking at the polling numbers, and the polling numbers that the national average says that she's still ahead, but if you adjust for this, she's not. And we've talked about adjusting for Trump performing better than he polls and all these different things. And I was thinking, you know what, there's got to be something out there that is unbiased that will give you a straight answer. And it's the markets. If you want to know who's actually most likely to win, you can probably look at two things: the betting markets and the equity markets. Where are people putting their money on this? Those are not going to be swayed by politics and by any type of propaganda.
Absolutely. You know, I think obviously the betting markets, specifically the bond markets, and the lower capitalization equities, your small caps, your mid caps, right? Those are going to do really well under a Trump presidency, right? Because again, we've been through the small caps. 40% of the Russell is small regional banks, which should do quite well under a Trump presidency, right? A lot of real estate, a lot of your cyclicals, a lot of your energy, financials, those types will do well. In fact, earnings seasons is about almost 40% of the way through, about 38% of the way done. 79% of the companies are beating. okay, with an average of about 6% beat, 5.8% beats, right? Now, the five-year average is 77% beat. So it's a little bit above that. But here's what's interesting is all the sectors, all of them, 100% of them, are beating their earnings by, you know, the lowest being basic materials. 44% of those companies are beating their earnings, okay?
Beating their estimates or beating from quarter over quarter?
Beating their earnings estimates, right?
Beating estimates, okay.
Now, the surprise ratio of the 11 sectors, 10 of them are actually have a positive surprise, okay? With the only negative sector being basic materials. And I think there's a lot of waiting until the election is complete before a lot of these larger companies, you know, buy materials and start getting into the big commodity purchases. Because obviously, here's the thing, if money is expensive and the economy is going to cool down a little bit for whatever reason, then they don't want to make a big, you know, purchase on the commodity side, your steel, your aluminum, your copper, those types. So that has been the only one. But I mean, utilities is 100. They have 100%. Utilities has 100% of the companies reported have exceeded earnings. 100%. Consumer staples, 92%, by an average surprise of 3%. Utilities, their surprise rate is 7.1%.
Explain that surprise rate. What is that? When you said 10 of 11 sectors have a positive surprise ratio or rate, explain what that metric means.
Okay, so basically, let's look at the S&P 500 as a whole, okay? And there's 500 companies to make the math easy. And right now, 79%, let's make the math easy and call it 80%. That would be 400 companies are exceeding their estimates. That would be an 80% percentage of companies beating. The surprise number is how much they're beating it by, okay? So right now, 5.8%. So if earnings for that particular quarter, again, to make the math easy, estimates were $100 across the board per share for all the companies combined. Right now, this quarter, it's $60.32 is what the market will earn this quarter, and it's beating by 5.7%, which means, kind of quick back of the napkin math, says that if we beat by 5-6% on a $60.32 estimate, we're going to make about $63.50-$64 a share instead of the $60.32 estimate. So it beats the earnings surprise beats by that percentage of the estimate. That makes sense. Okay. So again, back to the $100 to make the math easy. That would mean if the estimate for this quarter was $100, we would post earnings this quarter of $105.70 at a 5.7% surprise. See what I'm saying? So
yeah, gotcha.
The 5-year average is 77% of the companies beat by about 5.5%. Right now we're at 79% beating by 5.7. So it's strong. It's good. Things are good, you know.
But it's not quite as strong as it might sound at face value. I mean, when you say 79% beating by 5.8, that sounds great. But when you think about the average being 75% beating by whatever the number you said there, we tend to beat, which is probably a little bit of a, I don't know what that necessarily reflects. Does that just reflect that analysts tend to be a little bit on the conservative side? I mean, you would expect that number in a vacuum to be about 50%. Tend to expect that number to gravitate towards 50% long term.
Sorry about that.
No, so, I'm saving that for a horn sound every time you say something silly on the show. I'm going to play that in the background.
So, yeah, I mean, it's what it's telling you is that the market or the economy is running, you know, a little bit above average. Now, as far as consensus estimates, yeah, companies are going to provide guidance that is beatable. They're going to provide guidance that's conservative. They're not going to overpromise and then underdeliver because they know what will happen to their share price if they do it. And the other thing is if they continue, you know, if a company is obviously overpromises every quarter, they're not going to have any credibility. So they want to make sure when it comes to the street and the analysts that the guidance that they provide is similar to what the analysts predict is going to happen based on developments economically within, you know, with what's happening with them specifically. So, you know, there's an art to it, I guess, but nonetheless, they're not, very few companies are not going to be conservative. Most of them are very conservative with their guidance. So, you know, think things are good and the market has responded well. We've kind of been consolidating here for about the better part of a week and a half now, kind of at this 58.50 to sort of 57.75 range, which, you know, we kind of expect. There might be a bit of a blow off spike before the election. We might get over 5,900. And there'll likely be a, I think it's very probable we could get a pullback after the election. I think what we're getting here is a buy the rumor, sell the news on the equity side, and a sell the rumor, buy the news on the bond side. Okay. Because yields have absolutely just gone parabolic since the very beginning of October, and there's an interesting correlation that took place. So the yield on the 10-year was 3.8% on October 3rd. Okay. The day Trump overtook Harris in sort of the probabilities that he would win the election. He had been running behind her, especially after the debate, for a while.
This is October 3rd?
Correct. Then the Fed meeting happened on September 17th. They cut rates. Obviously, that caused a little bit of selling off on the bond side, thinking, okay, well, that's going to be good for the economy. So bonds sold off. So we kind of went from like this low 360s to kind of 380, high 370s, right, 380 by the end of October. And then as things progressed, Trump took over, sort of in the polling data, in the probability ratings, where be it Poly Market, be it Real Clear Politics Market or 538, he kind of took over, he overtook Harris. And since then, there has just been just this move in the 10-year. The 10-year has gone up 40 basis points, right? 40 basis points, call it 13% since October 3rd. You know, it's gone up 13% since October 3rd. And the equity markets haven't gone backwards. And I think that is a direct result of the markets pricing Trump in, because we talked about this before. The bond market got caught off sides in 2016. It's not doing it again. Okay. Yeah. It's not doing it again. They're going to get ahead of this thing. And I think they're selling the bonds off now. As his probability increases, you know, they realize, okay, well, if he actually wins this thing, there's going to be less regulation, lower taxes, probably higher deficits, right? Because he's going to, with the tax cuts come higher deficits initially, and then the idea is the economic growth brings more treasuries or brings more receipts back to the treasury, which then lowers deficits. That's the general theory. Whether it works is not, that's up for debate. That's for other people to talk about, right? That being said, buy the rumor, sell the rumor, buy the news. So people have been buying the equities, right? Especially the cyclicals and financials have done well. Earnings have been good, by the way. And they've been selling off their bonds as his probability continues to grow. Now, I looked at Real Clear Politics, and it's been kind of sticky around this range for the last week and a half or so. It's been about 60-40 in Real Clear Politics. Now, she's been as low as about 37 or 38. He's been as high as about 61 in Real Clear Politics right now. I'm looking at it here right now as we speak on October 25th, the year of our Lord, 2024, at 10 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. It is setting right at 60.0 for Trump and 38.8 for Harris. So it's still in that range, right? Poly Market is a little more generous, a little more volatile. It's 65.4 Trump, 34.6 for Harris. Okay. So that gives you a pretty good idea. Now, if you go back to when he ran against Clinton, it was flipped the other way and he beat Clinton and he almost beat Biden. So that's kind of giving me reason to believe that it's, a second Trump term looks increasingly likely. Okay. And to your point, Harris starting to kind of behave more like Bob Dole in 96. I think that's what she's trying to do. I think they're thinking that, well, she's not going to win and they want to put a superstar in for 2028 anyway, right? They're going to write this 4 years off in the White House and the executive, but they want to shore up what they can on the Senate side, which would be Sherrod Brown in Ohio. I think she's in Texas today. I believe Ted Cruz is running against somebody down there. Allred, I think his name is. Cruz will likely win that race too, but she's down there trying to help the Democrat out. So she's going to go around. I expect her here in Nevada soon to help out Jackie Rosen. So I think what they're trying to do is trying to hold on to the legislative side as much as they can. Okay. But I fully expect after the election that everything will sort of kind of just, it's like a twisting spring. It's like that garage door twisting spring again. It's going to pop. Okay, there's going to be a relief on the equity side and the bond side. People are going to run back to the bond market, buy the bonds because they sold them off, and they're going to run to the equity markets, probably sell off because they bought the rumor. So that's looking pretty likely, you know. I mean, anything can happen, and we can't dismiss or disregard a very likely October surprise or several October surprises coming. So, you know, but I mean, rates are, they've gone too far too fast. The 10-year does not deserve to be at 4.2% at all, in my opinion. You know, in fact, I was looking at there's a really great article that came out of Barron's, published by Dow Jones today by Nicholas Jasinski, talking about where the neutral rate should be, right? And the neutral rate should be, you know, 3.5%, right? So we should have 10-year somewhere in the 3.5% range, right about now, in my opinion. And we are in full restriction mode of the economy. If you look at current inflation rates based on the last few months, we're running at 2.5% inflation. PCE, core PCE is at 2.7 based on the last year. So we're running in the mid twos, but we're still sitting at a 5% upper bound in the Fed funds. So we are restrictive. And then the idea of the Fed funds rate, the neutral rate, is at what rate do we get maximum employment and stable prices? There's an equilibrium there. Now, there's folks like Ed Yardeni who disagrees with that concept entirely, and he's not wrong. Ed Yardeni is a very, very sharp guy. And he says the idea of what they call an R-star or a neutral rate, which was sort of the guy who came up with this, was a Swedish research economist in the 19th century named Knut Wicksell. Was his name? Knut Wicksell came up with the concept of a neutral interest rate. And the idea was at what interest rate would keep commodity prices stable. And then now we have the HLW model, which is Holston Laubach Williams model, Williams being of John Williams, who is the current Federal Reserve Bank of New York president. Okay. And obviously that's based off of maximum economic output, maximum employment, with the most stable prices. So it's a little bit more involved than the initial Swedish research scientist or economist from you know, the late 19th century, Knut Wicksell. Now, don't get me wrong, I would love nothing more than one of our Federal Reserve presidents to be named Knut Wicksell. So, you know, Fed President Wicksell stuff's like, oh yes, so, you know, so the market is coming as around, it's pretty good, and it's, you know, those are the rates. You know. So that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
he'd be wearing a little lederhosen, a little hat, you know, those little funky hats.
The parodies that we could do with that would just be so much fun, right? Like regardless of what he really even says, what you could do, just parodying that would be a blast. Especially in your newsletters, you could incorporate some Blink-182 in there somehow, I'm sure.
I mean, a guy named Knut Wicksell. I mean, he absolutely drinks tea out of a cup with both hands. That guy. you know, and he goes, he's a soft-hearted man. I can just tell. So, you know, it's an interesting concept. What actually takes place is anyone's guess, right? So, obviously, I think the long-term neutral rate is going to be obviously closer to 3, which is about where GDP is, which is about where, you know, wage growth should be. That's about the number. So, we'll see. And I think we're going to probably get a pullback in yields on the 10-year after the election to about 3, right to about where it was in the beginning of October, about 380, 385 right there. But it might be a little sticky there for a while, honestly, because, again, Trump is a bit of a wild card when it comes to economic growth and development. I mean, he is a low regulation, low tax, step up to the plate, give me the biggest, fattest bat I can find, and I want to hit this thing out of the park every single day. So there's going to be some changes.
You know, it's interesting to me. I think the rise of popularity in betting and the rise of availability of betting brings an interesting dynamic to the table in your decision-making process that didn't used to be there, right? I mean, 2012, even 2016, I mean, the betting population was mostly confined to Nevada and New Jersey, honestly. I mean, there were a few places here and there, but you're...
Indian reservations.
I'm not sure how much... Yeah, exactly. But now with there being such a rise in popularity and availability of it, a lot more people can place their bets. And it's such an interesting dynamic to bring to the equation, because on a simple, overly simplifying it, when you look at a poll that was conducted by Fox News, everybody's well aware that there may be a small bias in the polling data. And if you look at another poll conducted by MSNBC, everyone knows that there may be a bias in the polling data. And even if you take some type of an average between the MSNBC polling and the Fox News polling, you may be able to try to gather something in there. But even something we've talked about before, I think on the show, and I know I've talked about it with other people, the fact that Trump performs better than he polls is not a huge surprise to me, because I know that it seems to me that I just know a lot of people that may not vocalize their opinions, but if you ever really dig into what they believe, they're not going to advertise that they support Trump. But when they're in a private polling booth with just a pen to check a box, that's the box they're checking, but they're not going to talk about it. So the interesting thing about all that with the betting markets is the betting markets kind of neutralizes that a little bit, because that's people speaking with their dollars, not with their mouth, right? And that's more reflective of all things being taken into account. When it comes down to people's money, that's when they ignore the biases, they ignore everything else. They look at what they truly, truly do believe is going to happen is what they're going to put their money on. So it tends to be, Vegas doesn't. You look at these money lines and or these spreads on football games, and you see, oh man, I can't believe that Alabama's only favored by 3.5 against Vanderbilt. And they, whatever you think is, if you think that you know something that nobody else knows, you're probably wrong, right? And the betting markets just tend to be pretty efficient, just like the equity markets. But when you take all of these different data points, it's cool or interesting to me, I guess, that you can see such a strong correlation between the Trump polling average or betting odds and betting number. If you overlaid that with a 10-year treasury chart, the correlation's got to be, I don't know, 90, 95% over the last few months. That seems to be the biggest thing driving treasuries right now. Is that a fair takeaway from that?
And we had a hot jobs report in the beginning of October for September. We had 254,000, and that was absolutely 100% part of the calculus. CPI came in not cold against estimates, but not all that hot either. So it didn't help to cool it down, but it didn't really help to warm it up. So there's some other factors involved other than Trump, but I think right here, right now, he is probably leading the bond market. You know what I mean? And you get back to the old study that was done, 100 years ago or whatever it was. The only thing more important to people in their life, other than their health and the health of their immediate loved ones, is their money, right? So if you have a lot of money, are you going to go to, your boy down the street who, day trades? No, you're going to come to a firm like ours. You're going to go to a large firm and have it professionally managed because it's a lot of money and you want professional. If you're sick, are you going to go see Dr. Dre? Of course not. Just because he's cool and calls himself doctor doesn't mean he's a real doctor. Same thing as a day trader. They're not real investment managers. They're day traders. They're basically gambling on the minutes, right? It's not the same thing. So Harris, she might be cool and all these other things and, good looking and, good personality and likes to laugh, and that's great. But is she up to the job? That's what America has to decide. And when they're in the polling booth, again, do I trust her to do the job? I can like her all you want. I'm sure she's wonderful to hang out with, and she's probably great to talk to at dinner. I'm sure she's very bright. But is she up to that job? And or is not she up to the job? Is she up to the job more than the person than the other person, Trump? That's what America has to decide. So when it comes to people's money, they become very, very, very straightforward very quick, right? All of a sudden, opinions and biases and the qualitatives kind of go out the window, and it's who's going to make sure that this country's pointing in the right direction, is going to save our money. In fact, help me save money. I have clients across all the spectrum of politics, right? And a client of ours, really good guy, Democrat, he's pretty far to the left, and business owner, incredibly successful business owner, very successful, very smart guy. And he says, no, when it comes to my money, I'm very conservative. I'm very much a, I want to make as much money as I can, but when it comes to my politics, I'm very left wing. So, it's, and that's, I think, how a lot of people are, but he is unapologetic about it, which I kind of appreciate, because, he might not be the type that would vote for Trump because he is, definitely a Democrat. But there's a lot of those people that in the middle, probably a third of the US, that really doesn't, I really don't care. I'm kind of in the middle of the road. And, like me, I'm kind of the middle of the road guy. And I really don't care who's in or who's out, because I just look at the markets that I have, not the markets that I want. And I invest there. But a lot of people that want to be, that want to participate in the process, that are kind of in the middle of the road, they're gonna have that. They're gonna probably lean towards somebody who they know can probably keep inflation down and productivity up, which will likely be Trump.
So this has been for many, many shows this year, we've talked about this being a big part of a big variable, I guess, in the markets this year. And we've always got a lot of different variables, and a lot of, you got earnings, you've got economic data. You have the election and how the election results are going to infiltrate through future economic data. And that's really your job, is to sort through all of that and make the most informed decision and most calculated decision that you can with how to deploy capital. So with all that being said, if we are, and obviously this isn't a known, and we have some time between now and the election, and there's still room for October, November surprises even, but if we get to November 5th, November 6th, and you can check this one off, as an investment manager, you're always looking ahead 6 to 9 to 12 months down the road. What's the next X factor, or what are the future X factors that you're now starting to solve for a little bit? Because in May, you're reading the tea leaves as best you can to try to position capital around where you think, say, the election is going to be, where you think job numbers are going to be, where you think earnings are going to be, and which sectors are going to be in favor or not. What are you now looking at for Q1, Q2, Q3 of next year as the big variables that you need to be anticipating and calculating for in your decisions?
Corporate tax cuts / not corporate taxes not going up, not increasing. Okay. So yeah. If we're looking out to 2025, okay, and it probably won't actually happen until 2026, but let's just use 2025. So 2024 earnings, we think, is going to come in right about $245 a share. Trump gets in and reduces corporate taxes to 15%, like he says, which I don't think will happen. That's effectively a 6% reduction on corporate taxes. So if you take 2025's S&P earnings at $275 a share and you add 6% to that, well, that's what, about 15, 16 bucks a share? Now, all of a sudden, we're at, you know, 290, 295 a share. Okay. So you fold that back into what is a pretty high multiple we're living with right now, 21.6 times forward. And I think if you, you know, you bring that, you multiply or you divide those earnings by the current price, but in a $295 share and $275 a share, it brings that multiple back down to a more reasonable area, right? Probably closer to 19.5, 20 times. So what we need to see now is the market is fully priced. Okay. We have bull bears actually sitting at, let me see here. Let me check that out real quick before I step on my toes. We have AAII pretty high right now at, not terrible. Actually, it's down quite a bit this week. Okay. It just came out yesterday. My apologies for not looking at this earlier. We're down to 37% on the bulls and 30% on the bears. So we're down to a single digit spread, down from 30% just 2 weeks ago. Okay. So we're no longer really frothy. Is that, you know, as far as that's concerned, but the price, you know, we're 21.6. So what needs to happen now, and two things, either the price has to come back or earnings have to catch up. Or we have to have enough growth in the earnings. Yeah, obviously, there has to be enough growth in the earnings to justify that multiple. So the earnings have to catch up, but they have to catch up fast enough to keep that thing at 21, 22 times, which is a, kind of a big ask, actually. You know what I mean? Even with a good regulatory and corporate tax environment, that's still a high multiple. Okay. That being said, if you look at the companies that make up the top part of the market, right, and you remove sort of the Mag 7 away from the market, you know, the market trades at what, 16 and a half times X Mag 7. So, and then you put the Mag 7 back in and they're at 21.6, but then you get a lot of growth out of those seven companies, right? So it's not as stretched as people think it is. It's 21.6 times, but it's not 21.6 times with that group of companies in there. And that group of companies deserves that higher multiple because they're growing so fast. So it's not as stretch as it would normally seem, you know, back in the 2000s when obviously that was basically financials and energy companies. And we were trading at, you know, 21, 22 times then. We didn't have the growth, right? We didn't have the growth rate then. So that it's just, it's a different regime now than we had then. So I'm not as scared of 21.6 today with these companies that are leading the market as I would have been if we were looking at ExxonMobil and, you know, JP Morgan and Bank of America, you know, and IBM and Berkshire Hathaway leading the market, right? Those are, you know, those companies grow by 7, 8, 9% a year, right? So trading at 21.6, well, now we have something like, you know, a 2.5 to 3, a 3x ratio, which is not so great, versus these companies, we still have a 1.6, you know, growth to multiple ratio in the markets, which is really good. As long as it's, I like it below 2.
Well, it's really interesting. I was looking at some things here. So our last show was recorded October 11th. At that time, the RCP betting average, Real Clear Politics, had Trump at 53.6, Harris at 45. That was 8 days after Trump overtook Harris. Okay, so since that recording, the S&P 500 is up about 35 points or about 70 basis points, and I'm doing quick cocktail napkin math there. But the 10-year Treasury is up from 407 to 421, so that's about a 5% increase in the Treasury yield. Now, that's using a different starting point. We have been, you know, we had talked about October 3rd as the overtaking point. I'm condensing that down now to just the last 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But it seems in either time frame you look at, the bond market has reacted more and been more tightly correlated to Trump's polling number or betting average number than the equity markets have. And that can mean a couple of different things. It can potentially mean, and I don't think it necessarily does, it can mean that the equity markets have priced in that a little bit faster or anticipated that a little bit more, because what you have, that number that you just said, 21.6, is where we are right now forward. But if you account for a tax cut or corporate tax cut, that comes to more of like 19, 20 times earnings. Well, back to when we were trying to, you know, kind of peg the odds of, you know, when you said there you were anticipating 2.5 rate hikes this year, well, you can't actually have a half of a rate cut. Well, you can't actually have 40% of a Harris presidency, right? So it's not going to be 285. It's either going to be 275 or 295. One or the other is going to happen, and you're just kind of anticipating which it's going to be. So you've got all these moving forces going on at the same time. As an investor or as a money manager, you're trying to interpret all this data and try to see where you can connect these dots and lay out a thesis of, okay, what is the bond market is saying this, but the equity market is saying something slightly different. So figuring out and deciphering through, okay, well, you've got earnings season playing in also as a force that's affecting the S&P that isn't quite as strong of a force in the bond market. But then you've got the JOLTS reports and all these other economic data points that are coming out that are affecting bonds, maybe a little more than equities. So deciphering through all of that is kind of that's the art of it, right? There's always the science of knowing 21.6, being able to do the math, 21.6 or 19 or 20. But then the art of understanding which domino is actually affecting that domino and what do these all mean to each other, that's really what you and your team are really good at doing, apparently, is just picking those out, because it's not just taking a headline and making an assumption based on that. It's understanding what happened to cause the headline and what variables affected the thing that caused the headline to be what it was, and trying to sort through all of that.
In a vacuum, the S&P really hasn't moved all that much, 70 basis points. However, in relative terms, it has, right? So the yields have gone up 5% and the market went up 0.7%. So we have a lot more competition now from the bond side than we had early October. And we have a higher stock market. So I know this is good news environment, good economic news, rates are going to go up, market's going to expand. But that's set against a higher set of yields versus before, when things were kind of weak, where good news is bad news and bad news is good news. When those interest rates start to go up, obviously that pulls the market back in a hurry, in New York minute, right? So The market has gone up relative to the discount rate.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what we're looking at right now. It's like, okay, we're seeing the discount rate, you know, increase, the risk free rate increase, you know, pretty quickly at a pretty decent magnitude, yet the stock market has held its own against that.
Yeah.
So what that tells us is there's probably going to be some digestion that takes place after the election on both ends. But we, you know, as we see lower yields, you know, which will just be no more than a function of a kind of a sell the news event or buy the news event, I guess. I think that could get us to 6,000 on the S&P by the end of the year without too much trouble, maybe 6,100.
So if you were to play this out the way it seems to be, and I'm not trying to put I love to put you on the spot, but I don't mean to put you on the spot at the same time. But it sounds to me that do you think that heading into the election, let's just say as we get closer and closer to the election, odds stay where they're at, or maybe even increase further in Trump's favor as we head into it. Do you think that yields will continue to rise as his odds rise, or do you think this is kind of fully priced in for now, and that now we're just waiting to see if it was right? Obviously, if he takes a big hit in the polls, then we may see a reversal on it. But is there room for yields to get to 450 as his betting average gets to 80%, or is it pretty fully priced in? And same question, I guess, for equities.
Well, that's dependent on other data, right? So let's say no other data changes. Okay. I think we're pretty fully priced.
Okay.
You're about 420 or so on the 10-year with a Trump
rally. Because 60-40 is a pretty strong, I mean, yeah. There's not a gigantic difference between 90-10 and 80-20. Either way, it's heavily, there comes a point in time where it's like, okay, it looks most likely that he's going to win. And 60-40 is pretty much, I mean, that's a pretty strong.
Right. We don't have a tremendous amount of macro data that's going to come in between now and the election. Let me see here. So we've got, I mean, the election is Tuesday, the 5th. Jobs comes in Friday, the 1st. Okay. So we have, you know, obviously payroll data coming in on November 1st. Consensus is up for 117,000. Okay. And the unemployment rate. So we do have one, and we have ISM manufacturing coming in. So we have kind of one day where we have a set of macro events that could potentially have an impact on the bond market as well. Okay, so basically a week from today. Barring that, though, there's not a whole bunch that's gonna there's not a whole bunch that's gonna move the bond market, right? CPI, we have PCE coming at the end of this month, but that's pretty priced in. I don't think there's gonna be any surprises there because basically it's PCE for September. We already have PPI, we already have CPI. Okay, so most of that inflation data comes in after the election. But again, back to barring some surprise in the labor markets, like, you know, we have 117,000 consensus estimate for October. It comes in at, you know, 400,000 or something crazy. That could, of course, move the bond market. It comes in at, you know, minus 30,000. That can move the bond market. But barring something like that, I don't see a whole lot more motion here. In fact, I think you're going to start to see the 10-year pullback. I think you're going to start to see it prior to the election because the market's, again, it's always pricing in, right? So once it's decided, okay, Trump is going to win, now those guys are going to get ahead of it and they're going to try to sell that news or buy that news, buy those treasuries before everyone else does.
Yeah, yeah. And then that would, but you do think, would you say on the equity side, you would anticipate either a sort of a consolidation or a sideways movement into and through the election? Or do you think there is still a sell the news possibility to pull equities back just a touch?
I think one or two things, they're pretty tight. I think we could get sort of a blow off spike next week. You know, just pre-election, it's typically a very bullish week of the year, especially before an election, especially before, you know, somebody like Trump comes in. So we might get sort of the last few bits of people wanting to get into the market before they think it's too late. Okay. People that have kind of been on the sideline all year waiting, like, okay, I think Trump's going to win. I want to get in the market. So we could get a blow off spike up, you know, over 5,900, 5,950, somewhere like that. Or it'll just kind of consolidate again in this range of kind of 5,860 to 5,775. And then I think we'll see a pullback of about 5 to 7% sometime between now and, you know, basically the beginning of December and of November.
Gotcha. Awesome stuff, man. Well, always a pleasure. And I guess when we meet again, we will have some answers to those questions. So we'll be meeting, I guess, we'll be doing this again on November 8th. So we'll just be a couple of days after. Hopefully, at the very least, we know who won this time around.
Yeah.
It's always so funny to me. We can have a winner to American Idol in about 5 seconds, but it takes us a couple of months sometimes to figure out who won the election. But hopefully that will be the case this time. As always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for entertainment, amusement, and informational purposes only. We are not here to tell you what to do with your money. Neither Matt nor I nor any of our associated or affiliated entities know anything about your finances, so we're not here to tell you what to do. However, you may reach Matt and his team at 702-655-8300 or head over to intelligentinvestment.com and check out some other resources that he has or book some time to chat with he and his guys. I know you would be more than happy to help more people plug into the infinite knowledge and wisdom that is sitting around in that very protected brain of yours by all the hairspray and hair gel.
Right. Yeah, the hair.
Well, good luck with the rest of the afternoon. I know you said you got some things you got to get back to and some workers.
Race trailer.
Oh, okay. Cool, man. Well, good luck with all that. Have a great weekend, dude, and we'll see you here in a couple of weeks.